Hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live at daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. You can reach us, if nothing else works, at voxpop@wamc.org. There are five potentially tight Democratic primaries in New York in September. Four Senate incumbents find themselves in tough races, including two in legal jams, Raspberry and Peach. Get it? Legal jams? Okay. For the first time since being indicted
Strawberry is my favorite.
Since being indicted by a federal grand jury, State Senator Malcolm Smith of Queens and Senator John Sampson of Brooklyn are up for re-election. And then, of course, there's the governor's race. Cuomo is still far ahead in the polls, but Fordham Law Professor Zephyr Teachout has gained some traction in the last few weeks, earning the endorsement of the state's second-largest employees union and the League of Women Voters. Over in Massachusetts, is that right? No.
National Organization for Women.
National Organization for Women.
There you go.
As soon as I saw it, I knew somebody had laid a Mickey there for me, you know. Okay. Yeah, right. You're number three, right? Is that what you are? Yeah, okay. All right. And over in Massachusetts, the Democratic primary is likely to pare down the massive list of candidates. State Attorney General Martha Coakley, who blew it in her last major statewide election, is leading in the polls there. In Vermont, GOP voters are picking their candidate today to challenge incumbent Peter Shumlin in November. And earlier this month, Connecticut GOP voters chose Tom Foley to face off against incumbent Daniel Malloy. As you can see, there's a lot to talk about in politics today. Hey, Blair Horner is with us. He is my favorite person as a commentator and as a brilliant mind, he's the head of the NYPIRG you know, legislative director, and he's so bright, and it's so great to have him here. Okay, so let me ask you this. By the way, again, you can send in your stuff voxpop@wamc.org, or you can call us at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Bruce Herbach is here. He'll be answering your telephone calls. He's very patient, but don't tick him off. And here we are. So that's it. Okay, so Blair.
But they can tick us off. That's all right.
How come so few people vote in primaries?
Well, I mean, part of it is when you look at in New York, people that are enrolled in political parties are not everybody, right? So it's roughly a quarter of all voters are not registered in a political party at all.
Isn't that stupid?
And so they're, for them or for...
Well, no, but for the self-serving politicians in New York, they say, okay, either we're not going to let you come in and vote in our primary if you're in another party. Whereas I, living in a good state, Massachusetts, I become an unenrolled voter, and I'm allowed to participate in either party's election by going in and saying, okay, today I'm a Democrat, today I'm a Republican. I could do that. And then when you go out, then you're automatically deregistered, you know, in that party. So we have basically what's called an open primary in Massachusetts. But here, where the game is always loaded, you know, it's just one more thing. So you don't get to vote in a primary, which is where a lot of our candidates are chosen.
That's right. And so you, right off the top, a quarter of the voters are out of the picture when it comes to primaries. Secondly, the primaries in New York are in September. The second Tuesday in September is September 9th this year. Most people are still just sort of basking in the glow of Labor Day festivities. And they're not really thinking about primary day, frankly. They're thinking about other things. Kids are off to school. Summer's still sort of percolating along. So half the voters don't vote anyway in any of the elections. When you get into the primary voters, which is for one political party in New York, the percentage is usually anywhere from 10 to 15%.
Can you imagine? So your vote really counts when you vote in a primary.
And those tend to be the most motivated voters in the political parties. And so they tend to be the most active. So for the Democrats, they tend to be more liberal activists. For the Republicans, they tend to be more conservative activists. And so what you were describing before in Massachusetts, allowing independent voters, non-enrolled voters, to participate in the primary process probably skews the way that candidates position themselves in the primary. In New York, you have to skew your positions to the most active, in the case of Democrats, most liberal base, in the case of Republicans, most conservative base, which I would argue in some extent has people play more to this sort of the polar opposites of the political spectrum instead of trying to seek what often might be found Casper milquetoast or moderate positions that lead to getting bills done.
Into all of this comes Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, who is who has to decide who and what he is, and there is a. And there is a penchant on his part to take the money. We are estimating that it will be somewhere going into the election between $35 million and $50 million. And the same guy is saying, I want to have primaries that are paid for by the people. In other words, all voters should we should have independent financing of elections, public right. financing. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, you know, these are the rules. The rules of the game now are the guy with the most money usually wins. That's typically the way it works. And so Cuomo would be foolish to sort of unilaterally disarm going into an election cycle. That being said, he does say he supports public financing, which is a voluntary system. Nobody would have to participate in it. And so the candidates for office could choose to go into a public financing system, which would mean lower campaign contributions are allowed.
Well, couldn't he have gotten it done this time if he wanted it? He got that, it's a technical term for schlugging a system of, you know, trying to pin it all on the controller
yeah,
and do that
yeah,
one
yeah.
race.
Yeah, just,
but you know, clearly well, he would have, of course, had to give back maybe $50 million.
Yeah,
but,
right. But well, there, the, there you have it. I think you yeah. answered your own question. I mean, the reason that
well,
the governor...
Well, of course I answered my own question.
the reason that the governor decided to come up with what he described was a pilot system of public financing for only the comptroller, not for himself, was because if you are the incumbent and you create a system of public financing for this coming November, you'd have to give back 75-80% of the money that you've raised so far because the contribution limits are so low. If you're running for governor, Cuomo can accept up to roughly $60,000 in legal campaign contributions from any one person. That's staggeringly high. You can only give about $3,000 or $4,000, depending if there's a primary for federal office. But you can give $60,000 in New York to somebody running for governor. And so he tends to focus his fundraising on the biggest donors, the individuals who
yeah,
are wealthiest.
Yeah, Zephyr Teachout, who's running against
That's
him,
right.
is always trying to make the point that she has more individuals giving a dollar or whatever, $10, than he has in terms of total numbers of givers.
Yeah, and that's right. He has actually, that's exactly right. But you think about it, it's much more efficient, right? If you can make one call and get $10,000 from somebody, or you can make 100 calls to get $100 from those 100 people, what's more efficient? The one call to $10,000.
Now, why is any, look, Blair Horner, you know this better than anybody, but why is anybody giving you $60,000? They want something,
That's right?
They
That's
mean
right.
They
this
want
is modern day American capitalism. People aren't giving this money away because they're feeling charitable. They want something in return. They must believe that they get it or they wouldn't keep forking over the money. Andrew Cuomo is not the first governor who's been able to raise lots of money in campaign contributions. There's a guy named Pataki who did a very good job of it as well. But it's the same motivation. People expect that it will somehow come back to benefit them down the road.
Or as John R. Arbuckle said on an early television commercial, you get what you pay for.
No, or in this case, lease. I don't know if you can buy this, people's votes. But I think what they're looking for is the opportunity to influence public policy from their own perspective or to drive contracts to their own favorite businesses or whatever. Whether or not they do it, of course, if it was explicit, it would be illegal. If it's sort of a wink and a nudge, then, you know.
An understanding.
An understanding.
There is, you know, there's understanding among
thieves. When people yeah. give $60,000 campaign contribution, I mean, we've documented that even though under New York law there are campaign contribution limits, we've identified individuals that have given over $1 million in a year.
Sure.
Because if you know what you're doing in New York, you can give as much money as you want.
You can give some to the parties who have
That's
unlimited
right. The housekeeping
ability.
Accounts,
yeah.
the political parties, the individual
right.
candidates, through your various, if you're a business person and you have multiple limited liability companies, each one of them are counted under New York law as an individual.
Yeah.
And so you can give through all of, let's say you had 10, each one of those. You
so
can give $60,000.
So these political parties know exactly what they're
That's
doing
right.
when they set these things up. as you said, a wink and a nod and the rest. 1-800-348-2551 over in Massachusetts. Got a hell of a primary going on over there. Apparently the two leaders, according to the polls, are Martha Foley. Martha Coakley. Thank you. I knew I had the right guy sitting across from me. Martha Coakley and Hushi. And then Steve Grossman, who is running a very strong race, but coming in second, but I believe was endorsed by the Democratic Party at the convention. So because they saw what Coakley did when she ran for Senate against Scott Brown and messed it up. So they were, I think they were.
But she's been, wasn't she reelected Attorney General in between?
Yeah.
In between the Scott Brown race.
So what's your point?
Well, maybe she's gotten better.
She's got name recognition, and maybe she hasn't. Anyway, we're gonna take a little break, and when we come back, I expect you all, your assignment is to get on the phone, 1-800-348-2551. Although we love talking politics, we'd rather hear from you.
WAMC comes from Empire Exhibits and Displays, Albany, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive displays, and commercial casework for trade shows, events, museums, and corporate interiors. EmpireExhibits.com. The Cheese Traveler, Delaware Avenue, Albany. Cheese sandwich and specialty food shop, offering classes and tastings and Friday night cookouts through Labor Day. TheCheeseTraveler.com. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting Winslow Homer, The Nature and Rhythm of Life, September 2nd through January 4th, 2015. ArkellMuseum.org. Lori Stillwell, CPA, PC, providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond. StillwellCPA.com. And the Lake George Dinner Theater, presenting the comedy Lake Effects, running now through October 11th. LakeGeorgeDinnerTheater.com for information and tickets.
So where are you? That's the question. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You know, Blair, it raises an interesting question to me, and that is that more and more we are finding people don't really care that much about politics. And, you know, guys like you and me, we write one more column, we go on one more television show, the New York Times quotes you. But in the end, what is it? It's that people, I think, perhaps feel that the citizen doesn't stand a chance, and therefore they're opting out of the system.
Yeah, I think they're so sickened by what they see in American politics, this sort of toxic discourse that goes on between Republicans and Democrats. Nothing gets done.
It's also self-serving. They draw their own districts in New York State.
Yes.
They make sure
the
sucker doesn't have a chance. Well, some states like Iowa have outside, groups that will do this.
But by and large, the way the country works is lawmakers draw their own lines. And I think the public gets that, but I don't know how much they pay that close attention. I know that what they see is government isn't working for them. The powerful interest groups are having the biggest impact on the process and driving things through big money. I mean, the Citizens United Supreme Court case just opened up the spigots.
Yeah.
And this sort of the toxic, coarse, ferocious, demeaning, awful so-called political debate that you have in the country, I think just turns people off. People don't want to listen to this stuff.
Yeah, no, it's true. There are four phones ringing. Our wonderful Bruce is taking them down right now. He'll put up a yellow piece of paper. That's the way it works. And on it,
it's very high tech.
It'll be very synthesized.
The advent of Post-its.
Okay, we'll go to Kathy in Cooperstown. Bless you, Kathy, for calling. Thank you. You're on.
Hi. Hello, Alan.
Hello.
And Blair. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like to hear you guys talk a little bit about Zephyr Teach Out.
Right.
For one thing, to get her name out there, I think there are lots of people, especially Democrats, who haven't even heard her name.
But once you hear it, you're not going to forget it. Zephyr teach-out.
Yeah. Well, at first I thought it was something like a teach-in, but then I realized it was a person.
Right.
But anyway, I'm wondering if she has more than the proverbial snowball's chance. She certainly is raising some good issues that I hope Cuomo will address.
Well, first of all, let me say that we here at WMC have had her on for 2 half-hour programs on the Capital Connection, which is a statewide show. In other words, she gets visibility in virtually every public radio station in New York. And we're very proud of that because we like to bring both sides to everybody. I asked her about it, about her name, and she said that her father and mother were hippies. And therefore, therefore they named her Zephyr.
And her middle name is Rain. Zephyr Rain Teachout.
How do you spell Rain?
R-A-I-N.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, she's...
I think that just makes it pretty clear to everyone that they were hippies.
She's an absolute, she's an absolute, Kathy, absolute breath of fresh air. And, you know, she's unafraid. You know, there are a lot of people who are afraid of this governor for one reason or another. But you know, just yesterday, the National Organization for Women in New York State endorsed her. You know, when the president was asked of the organization, why, you know, with Cuomo, with his sterling record on women, why they said, well, you know, he's not a woman. But she's making waves. All right. No question about it. And she has a running mate named Timothy Wu, and who is from the downstate region, while Kathy Hochul, from upstate, is A, unknown, and B, was a congresswoman. She didn't win re-election. And I think Cuomo felt that, you know, having representation from the whole state was a good idea. So she gets nominated. And right now it looks like Timothy Wu could give her a real run for her money, because in New York State, following me now, everybody, in New York State, Democrats win primaries only if they're from the 5 boroughs or around there, whereas Democrats hardly win from upstate regions. So there's a theory that Wu might actually beat her, but I don't believe it. Go ahead. Did you want to add anything?
Well, if you look at the normal metrics, the governor has a huge war chest. The Teach Out Wu ticket have basically no money to speak of. The governor's, according to the polling, relatively popular incumbent. You would think that Teach Out doesn't have a chance.
Right.
But what I think it makes a little bit different is, we talked about this a little bit earlier, very few voters show up at the primaries, and the ones in the primaries, and the ones that do are the most motivated voters. And I think where the governor should have a concern is the base of the party is sort of at best lukewarm to him. And there are elements of the base of the party that are very motivated for Teachout. I mean, the fact that Teachout got 45,000 signatures on her petitions shows that she has a field operation. And in a low turnout Democratic primary, she could do very well. If she does well, I think you're right that Wu would really have a good chance against Hochul.
Now, what number would you define Blair Horner as well? 20? If she got 25% of the vote, it would be huge.
Yes. If she got 30, I think Wu might knock out Hochul.
Interesting. Well, Kathy, very good that you've made that call. I've enjoyed talking to her, and it's refreshing to see this kind of a contest. So thank
Indeed.
You for calling.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Lots of free phones. Naturally, we're talking politics. Okay, let's go to James in the Hudson. Okay, James, you're on.
Hi, thank you. I'm going to stick up for 2 unpopular positions.
All right.
And I'm a liberal Democrat, but the Electoral College and 30-day voter registration, because I think that people, you know, should be informed about the issues.
In other words, to let somebody vote, they should be informed.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, that's my opinion. Thank
gotcha.
You.
Okay. So
Electoral College first?
Well, let's take the Electoral College first. You go first.
Well, you're the professor.
No. I taught this for 40 years. I know a little about it, but I want to hear what you have to say. You're refreshing. You're young. You know.
Yes, me and dirt. That's right. We're a neck and neck race for youth. In terms of the Electoral College, I mean, it's interesting, as listeners know, the Electoral College is really based on the number of congressional seats that you have in a state.
Yes, every congressional seat plus two senators.
That's right.
And
so if you win, depending on the state, but by and large, if you win in a state, in New York, for example, it's a winner-take-all state. You win the state, you get all of the Electoral College votes. One of the reforms that's been proposed is that you either that you make that basically a population-based victory. So when Al Gore lost to George W. Bush, for example, Gore had more votes in terms of the voters that showed up at the polls, but because of the way the Electoral College worked, Bush won more states' electoral votes, thus became president of the United States. So I presume what James was sort of wanted us to sort of raise is whether or not we think the Electoral College is an anachronism, which made sense in the horse and buggy days when the information about how the turnout was in Virginia versus New Hampshire, they have to ride their horses through Washington to figure out what the Electoral College was, who they were going to choose, as compared to now, where we can instantaneously tell which. You know, who won the elections.
Now, James, there is a proposed fix for all of this, which is that state legislatures pass a law, and that law will say whoever wins the most popular votes, we will vote for president. We will cast our electoral votes by law for that candidate.
And this would be in proportion to the voter.
Yeah. I'm sort of... But a lot of countries that have proportional representation have terrible governments.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think we'd be looking at this as sort of a magic bullet. I mean, I think the question really is, in a democracy, what makes the most sense? That you base your choice for president on the popular vote or on the Electoral College vote? I mean, those really are, at the moment, the two options. Essentially, the popular vote would be proportional representation. We've seen it happen. Bush-Gore is not the first time that a president's been chosen by the Electoral College vote, and probably won't be the last one unless the Constitution was changed.
Nope.
Well, no, but I mean, but Bush v. Gore, that was the Supreme Court.
That's right. There are those people who think it was stolen.
Right.
We was robbed.
Yeah, we was robbed. Yeah. Well, we were. Okay.
And on the second issue, though, on the voter registration stuff, I mean, I'm not sure if James, what he means about the 30-day period. James, do you mean that people shouldn't be allowed to register after 30 days or within 30 days of the election?
I think 30 days is I'm being for an informed electorate, but not, you know, exclusive, but I think that's a, you know.
I mean, right now in New York State, different states have different rules. In New York State, you can't register to vote. Except in very limited circumstances, within 25 days of the general election. The state constitution says 10 days. There's a law in the books that says 25. We've always argued for same-day voter registration, the election day registration, and being allowed for people to vote because most of the time, for example, in presidential debates, they don't occur until maybe a week before the general election. And that's when the voters are starting to really tune in on the election and get their information. If they're what you have in New York now, and I think it dampers voter enthusiasm, is particularly for young voters, is if you get you're just started tuning in, you watch the debates, you want to register to vote, but you miss the deadline, which occurred in early October. So the New York has essentially close to what you're proposing, which is 30 days. But I think it really should be easier for people to register and vote whenever they want.
So in other words, you guys disagree on this. Because I think what James is saying is, if you make people really go through hoops, they will educate themselves and they'll know more.
My argument is that people don't get the information for the election until it gets closer to the election. And since we're talking about a right, not a privilege, that we should do everything humanly possible to make it easier for people.
I'll break the tie. I'm with Blair.
Here's $5, Sal.
I'm with Blair. Thanks, James.
Okay.
Thanks for great
I've been a fan. And I've been a fan of NYPIRG since I was in college a long time ago.
That's
Thank you very much.
Thank you, James. Thanks
great.
A lot.
Okay. Bye.
Let's go to Jim.
I want that $5 back now.
Let's go to Jim in Adams, Massachusetts. Jim, you're on.
Yes. Good afternoon, Alan and Blair. Just wondering if we could please not limit the discussion just to two top runners in the Democratic primary in the state of Massachusetts.
Okay, who you got?
Well, we have Coakley, we have the other fellow, but we don't Grossman. We don't mention anyone else.
No, there are, there's Berwick. And he's running, according to the polls, he's running behind, but that doesn't mean he can't catch up. I live on a place in Great Barrington called The Hill.
Yep.
And The Hill, you know, have a lot of Priuses, stuff like that. And I can tell you right now that The Hill has never called an election correctly in the history of mankind.
Good.
Whoever the leftist, the most left person is, has the lawn signs usually. You know, when Richie Neal, very popular, wonderful congressman, ran and won overwhelmingly, The Hill didn't seem to support him. I did, but The Hill didn't. So, you know, if you want to know what's going to happen in Massachusetts, come up to The Hill, count the lawn signs, and do the exact opposite. And that is what happens.
We just need to hear it more in the news media like your show. You're not limited to a few seconds sound bite. You were having an hour discussion. Just would be nice if we could hear about the back runners as well.
Well, we have,
runners.
In fact, our news people have done that, Jim.
All right, thank you.
They have done the whole thing.
And there are in New York, I assume this is true also in Massachusetts, other minor political parties that offer up their own candidates. The Green Party candidate in New York, the Libertarian Party candidate.
We've had the Green Party on here and listen to them. Okay, 1-800-348-2551. You got a chance. There are three free phones, and we'll go to Jamie in Ellenville. Okay, Jamie, you're on.
Hey, Alan. Just a couple of comments. One is that if we really believe that this is democracy and we want to maximize voter participation, then everybody should be registered to vote in whatever election they're entitled to on the issuance of a Social Security number.
That's an interesting idea.
Yeah, that makes just instantly. You're just registered. An election should run for 7 days. And if you really want to maximize democracy, you pay $100 additional on your income taxes if you don't vote.
That's a good idea. But here's what I want. I love your last sentence, which was, if you really want to maximize democracy, suppose the characters in the state legislature don't want to really maximize democracy and want to do the exact opposite to protect themselves.
Look, when we allowed the presidential election of Al Gore to be taken that way without us coming out on the street. Imagine if that was in, you know, the Ukraine or anywhere else in the world. How many people would have been out on the street for what issues were raised there? You know, they decided that they can now manipulate elections however they want.
Hey, Jamie, I couldn't agree with you more. I really couldn't. I mean, I was
astounded. And one thing about Mario, about Andrew Cuomo,
yeah,
he's got the same fault of his father, and that's this arrogance. And, like, you know, the same way it bit him in the butt with the tacky, that people in New York State just couldn't put up with that thing
for a fourth
about
term,
him.
Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about. And he's not as principled as his father. You know, like, he's not in line with the real view of the leftist that this state's about. You know, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, I don't think you would be either if he got a kick.
If he got what?
If he got kicked, yeah.
Well, I think he's going to get kicked, but I don't think he's going to get kicked out. In other words, I think that there's going to be a fairly, which is very interesting. I mean, here's this guy. He's going into this election, as I've just said, with $35 to $50 million. Along comes Zephyr Teachout. She's got nothing, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's got more donors, by the way, than he has. But they're dollar donors as opposed to, you know, $50,000 donors and around there. So I think he's going to get kicked. I think he's going to. I think that a lot of people are going to vote for Teachout, but I don't think she can. She can.
Pataki was sleeping on my friend's couch up by Columbia. I live by Columbia University. Used to come into town, used to sleep on the couch before he became the governor within the year. You know, so and I never thought Andrew was going to that his father Mario was going to lose. Did you?
No, I did not know, but I spoke to him a couple of hours before the results came out, and it wasn't looking good. Remember, it was an election in which the Republicans took everything in the United States. And I don't agree with you, by the way, about Papa's arrogance. I think Papa, he may have feigned it, but I don't think he was an arrogant man. I think he was extremely...
No, he was righteous. He was more righteous about what he knew was right.
Right.
And like, he wouldn't listen to the nonsense. And it's funny how it was, you know, misused. It was manipulated to make him look that way.
Well, yeah. Jamie, we're going to give everybody a chance here. We got to get off.
Yeah. That was a cool day.
But you did very well. I thank you for your call. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Okay. We got three calls. We're going to come right back to them. But first, we have to take a tiny little breaklet.
Support for WAMC comes from the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, working to permanently preserve the natural, scenic, and recreational resources of the Lake George region since 1988. LGLC.org. Paradise Copies, Northampton, Massachusetts, providing printing design for customers for over 20 years. From digital to offset, color copies, scans, logos, and more. ParadiseCopies.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond. 518-580-8080. Northshire Bookstore, Saratoga Springs, New York. Yannick Murphy presents This is the Water, August 29th at 7 p.m., northshire.com. And Pine Cobble School, Williamstown, Massachusetts, since 1937, an independent day school serving preschool through ninth grade. A good beginning never ends, pinecobble.org.
We are back. Okay, we'll go to Carl in Palatine. All right, Carl, you're on 1-800-348-2555.
Hello, WAMC 90.3.
Okay, Carl, this keep it clean. Go ahead. I got my hand on the. Very clean.
Hand
on the dump button.
There you go. I hear it. Especially with Blair Horner there. I'm very interested, have been for decades, in the operating course of our legislatures, state certainly, but also particularly national, as well as, secondary question, the chief executive officers.
Okay, so what's the question?
Here's what I'm coming to, sir.
Okay.
How much does it cost per legislator to operate their office on an annual basis in comparison with comparable companies' operating costs? I emphasize operating.
Okay, you've asked your question. Blair, do you know?
Well, I'm not sure how you would compare it with companies.
But let's just say...
Countries. Countries.
Yeah, well, let's just say... We know this, Carl. Great question. They have huge staffs. What they do with those staffs is another area. They would say to you, well, we're out in the community and we do all this casework and everything else, and that's why we have to have these big staffs and big offices. But what bothers me the most about the legislature is the fact that, unlike the United States Senate, where each senator really does have a certain modicum of independence, that isn't really true with the legislature. They go into a conference, the boss tells them what we're going to do, they claim that it's all hashed out and we all work it out together, but you know, the speaker comes out of and the majority leader of the Senate comes out of a meeting, and they say this is what we're going to do. So I think it's a lot of money spent. Now, for example, not to carry on too long about this, but right now we all know that everybody can have a laptop in the legislature. They print every bill. They employ all of these people in the print shops, and you go up and you can get all of these bills. It's nonsense. We really should be paperless at this stage of the game and spend that money.
No, it actually is a constitutional amendment on the ballot this November to allow that.
Yeah.
In terms of spending, it's hard to compare because in New York State, the way each legislator's office is, the amount of resources they have and staff is based on whether or not they have political power. So the minority parties in both houses get a lot less than the majority parties in both houses. The leadership of each of the conferences, minority or majority, tend to get more, but certainly the majority leaders of the House get a lot more than the minority leaders of the House. And so while you could come up with a straight number, and I believe New York's legislature, I think, spends more on itself than any other legislature in the country,
I think
more than California.
I think it does.
I believe the number's around $200 million, but my apologies if that is untrue, but it's somewhere up there. And that would mean there's 213 legislators, roughly $1 million in office on average. But the range is going to be dramatic between the junior backbench minority legislator compared with the leadership of the majority party. And I'm not sure how you would do a straight up comparison with other legislatures. Like, just a quick example, in the state of New Hampshire, for example, you have somewhere in the neighborhood, I think, of 400 legislators.
Yeah, and the pay is?
And they get paid, I think, nothing, right? Basically nothing.
Well,
it's very low. And so they don't have the same amount of staff. So I don't know how you would do the kinds of comparisons. In terms of salaries, New York's legislature, in terms of straight salaries, not additional benefits, is, I think, third or fourth highest in the country. California's number one. I think Michigan's number
two. But then we pay them for leadership, so-called leadership.
That's right. You
positions.
Get Lulus on top of that,
yeah,
and it can go up to, and it can almost be another 50% on top of it. And they're allowed to have outside jobs.
Right.
And so
disgraceful.
Which is not uncommon. In fact, that's typical for the rest of the country as well.
Yeah. Hey, Carl, thank you for your call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Right. Let's go to Lee in Ulster. Welcome back, Lee. You're on.
Hi, Alan. I want to offer what I think is a practical solution to the voter registration issue, which is a conversation that just goes on and on and on and somehow never gets resolved. Wouldn't it be a possibility to make every post office a voter registration site? You could request a voter registration form from your mailman. You fill it out to give it back. You go to the post office. You register. You move from one place to another. You register. It's not always the when can you. It's the where you were supposed to go. When are they going to be open? What do you need when you get there?
Sure.
Post office is always there, and it's already a federal building.
Okay. Blair goes first. Go ahead, Blair.
Well, you could actually just so for all the listeners in New York, I don't know what it's like in some of the other states, but in New York, you can go to the New York State Board of Elections website and download a PDF version of the voter registration form and mail it in. Through the Department of Motor Vehicles and some of the other agencies, there is electronic ways to actually register to vote. So there's lots of ways, but I agree fundamentally with the caller that we should be doing more to allow people to make it easier for people to register to vote. But I have to admit, I think I agree most with Jamie, who said that why aren't we just automatically registered to vote when we turn 18?
And then fined if we don't vote.
Yeah, I don't see how you're going to—I mean, if you think that it's possible to do that, that would be great. I don't see any effort to make that happen.
No, the problem we have is the politicians that are elected in New York and in other states are elected under the current rules.
Yeah, they got here the old way.
That's right. And if you want to get them to change the rules and bring in new voters, that makes them nervous.
Yeah.
And that's why voter registration reform is really hard.
And, Lee, that's why campaign financing is so interesting. If I have it right, the assembly, made up of Democrats, votes for campaign financing. But they've always had the Republicans, who they knew would say no. I'm going to be very interested to see, based on what Blair just said of the new way and the old way, I'm going to be very interested to see what happens if the Democrats take the Senate, which the governor now says he's going to help them do and all the rest of it. And now you have these two groups who will make voting theoretically easier. We'll see. We'll just see, as my old professor used to say. We'll just see.
We'll see. I mean, for the 70% of the population who isn't going to figure out that they can go to X website, download to some kind of a printer, get it to some other building,
maybe,
you know, 92%. Install it with it. I just think that if you've got the lights paid for in every town with somebody behind the counter, that you should take advantage of
we
that
are
as an
going,
opportunity.
Lee, we're going
to
write you into that column, and we thank you for it. You're always, always good call.
That's
thank
a good
you,
idea.
Yeah.
Thank you. Bye.
Let's go to Pete in Guilderland. Okay, Pete, you're on. Hey, Pete.
Hello, yeah, got you. Kind of a crazy idea. I just want to get your thoughts on the two-party system is obviously pretty bad or horrible in my mind, what's going on in Congress. How about the next presidential election, first place becomes president, second place becomes vice president?
We've had that. We've had that in history. Oh,
let's
absolutely.
Jefferson.
Let me hear about
Thomas,
that.
Yeah,
John
it didn't,
Adams
it didn't work. They went to war. You think you see anything bad now? You should have seen it then. That's why now you vote for both of them. But in fact, at the beginning, that's the way it was, sort of.
Where was that? Who was that?
Jefferson,
I think.
Adams.
I think Thomas Jefferson was the vice president to John Adams.
And they both died on the same day.
That's right.
Yeah.
Pete, it's an interesting idea, but I think the toxic nature of the politics in America would make this brutal. I mean, you'd have the vice president of the other party in many cases, not all, of course, seeking to undermine the president at every turn and doing every sort of, you know, information that they could get to the president's disadvantage.
Yeah.
How would the president prepare the vice president to take over the Oval Office if something terrible happened to the president?
Just like FDR prepared Harry. Just like, I have to get this one shot in. Just like FDR.
Or LBJ with Jack Kennedy.
Yeah, just like FDR.
But I mean, if they're of the same political party, there's at least a possibility that the paradigm of the administration that the public elected is maintained if, God forbid, something terrible happened to the president.
But once they're elected, they can lose their Democratic and Republican affiliation.
Forget about it.
Come on, do it for me, Alan. Make it happen.
That ain't going to happen. But thanks. Just saying. Thanks,
Thank
Pete. Appreciate it.
Give it a shot. Bye-bye.
1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in right now are so good that if you could, you know, take a tip on the stock market, if you're following me, you know, you'd be a rich man if you just were betting on being able to get in. Okay, we got one lonely line. Let's go to Bruce in Kingston. Bruce, you're on.
Yeah, I'd like to make a suggestion about voter registration. I'm in favor of what I heard so far, and other people have said, you know, extend the amount of time, a week, and make the post offices a place. All this is good, but none of them are dealing with the motivation. If people are in don't care, they're in semi-despair because they don't think their vote's going to count, they feel, why should they waste their time and energy? I think what needs to be done is a very organized, concentrated recruitment of entertainers and athletes with big name recognition, and then organize people to get to the polls on the day, which some of that is done. But I'm talking about a lot of money put into this, because numbers are the only thing which will defeat the money and the big corporations and this whole political stalemate.
Well, you're not all wrong, but you're not all right either. I mean, I think you're right in that the more people that vote, the better off we are, because it tends. But on the other hand, you look at the Cuomo ads that are now. Estorino has gone to court today. Here's Cuomo going into this election with $35 to $50 million. And he's got all these ads on about Estorino. And Estorino's yelling at the top of his voice, "You lied about me. You're not allowed to do that. You broke the FCC rules about lying in a political commercial." It's not going to go anywhere, obviously. But it's the money in politics, Bruce, that counts for so much in all of this. And I think that's why people are disgusted. Blair?
Well, I agree. I agree with that. But again, you know, every now and then there has been somebody with a big name recognition, some entertainer, some athlete. But if this was done on an organized basis, I think it will do a lot to overcome this other financial deficit. And one other thing, ever since, which has nothing to do with this in particular, but ever since Andrew Cuomo was the spoiler when it looked like Carl McCall was going to be our first...
I remember that.
You know, Governor, I've distrusted Andrew Cuomo.
Yeah, just because he jumped in the last couple of days and tried to take it away from McCall?
And he had no chance, but it took enough votes away that McCall didn't win. I think he would have been.
I don't know that that's why McCall lost, but I do agree with you that it was not a good performance. I think you're right about that. Hey, Bruce, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Okay, let's go to Richard in New Baltimore. Richard, you're on.
Hi there. Thank you. You guys are making politics sound interesting.
I know who you are. Go ahead.
Yay! So I have a question, and that is, rather than at the last minute, do you have some information about the upcoming amendments and propositions that are going to be on the ballot this year?
Do we ever? Okay, well, Rich, just do a bird call for us, and I will ask Blair to tell us what's on the ballot. Because
who?
Who? Blair.
Who?
Oh,
I thought he was running for lieutenant governor. There are three questions on the New York ballot, changing the state constitution. The first one is a proposal to change the state's redistricting process. The second is a proposal to change the constitutional requirement that lawmakers have printed copies of all bills on their desks. And the proposal would allow for them to have the bills in electronic form. Fairly minor one. The third issue is a $2 billion bond act to fund probably the technology upgrades in schools across the state of New York. The first one, NYPERG has a view on it in terms of the redistricting.
Well, what's your
proposal.
View, very quickly?
Excuse me?
I know your view. But
yeah,
I'm
vote
asking,
no. That's the
vote no is
yeah,
your view.
It's a fraud.
Yeah. It's a phony because
I've heard the opposite side being presented by some other groups, and I was curious. I had heard your position before on one of the commentaries that you provided to WAMC, and appreciate it very much. But I'm hearing two sides to that now, and I'm still weighing it in my head.
No, that's fair. I mean, you could go
5 pounds.
On the redistricting question again, I don't want to use up too much time. We have another caller.
Sure.
Basically, it comes down to whether or not there's this new commission being proposed under the state proposal is independent. People who support the proposal say they are. People who oppose it, like me, say it's not. The proposal says that the legislature makes the call, that the commission makes recommendations, and if the legislature rejects it, they can make the lines themselves, just like they do now.
Which they, of course, will do, Richard. I mean, I think that's the whole point.
Right.
If you're going to have an outside commission, let them draw the lines and eat it. You know, that's going to be what to do.
Or you pick the right people that are puppets and draw the lines just the way you
would.
Well,
of course. I mean, these guys are going to appoint the people on the commission.
Right.
If the commission, by any stretch of the imagination, comes up with a good
something
plan,
they don't like.
Which is unlikely, they have the right to override it.
That's right.
Who would vote for that?
I got it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Richard. Okay.
Sure.
Okay, and let's go to Peg in New Paltz. Peg.
Hey, how are you? You were talking earlier in the program, I was driving this time and couldn't call in, about why people have lost faith or are disinterested. I think it's because, you know, you really listen to the issues and you listen to the people and you vote somebody in, and all of a sudden, nothing happens. You know, and there's time after time, especially in local issues, you know, you see things stalled. And, you know, we voted Bonacek back in because we didn't want the casinos in Sullivan County, and now that's what we're looking at. And so I think it's just a disheartening thing. At least that's what it is in my opinion, and I offer that to the show. You can discuss it, and I'll get off the line.
No, don't get off the line.
Oh, okay.
You called. You're a part of this now. Okay, go ahead, Blair.
Well, I understand the caller's frustration. I mean, I'm a voter just like everyone else. But part of the problem you have in politics just generally is a lot of times these issues are more complicated. When you go from soundbite to, you know, telling voters what it is you believe and then comparing it to actually the complexity of whatever the legislation is that comes out of some negotiated compromise. Oftentimes, even in the best of circumstances, what comes out of that process is something, more like the camel than the horse. So I can understand the frustration.
Wait.
And part of it
is, sometimes people
say things that they don't believe in,
sorry,
and then they get to office.
I'm sorry, I missed the analogy to the camel and the horse.
Right. The old saying is a camel is a horse by committee. Often legislation, under the best of circumstances, even when it comes out through the compromise negotiation process, what comes out is something that doesn't always look like what you wanted when you go in. That's the best of circumstances. The worst is when candidates say one thing and then do another.
Go ahead, Peg.
I think what I see is, you know, you see this vibrant purple and you see this vibrant orange and this vibrant blue candidate, and give them 30 days in the grind and they all become this lovely shade of gray.
Okay. All right. So thank you, Peg. Appreciate your call a lot, and we understand your frustration. Believe me, we do. Okay. Let's go to Catherine in West Taconic. Okay.
Cynthia,
I'm so sorry. Cynthia, you're on, and only for a minute. Go ahead.
I'm calling because I'm unhappy about the way you keep saying Cuomo's going to win, Cuomo's going to win. He's got so much money, Cuomo's going to win.
Yeah.
Like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Uh-huh.
You're not helping the other candidate by caring on about how much Cuomo is going to win by.
Well, you may be right. You may be right. On the other hand, I have to tell you, we're the ones and the only ones who've had her on a statewide program twice.
So I know. I heard her both times. I'm not taking it back. I heard her three times, twice.
Yeah, take it back.
Well, the only thing I would add is there's a House Majority Leader named Eric Cantor who outspent his opponent
a gazillion to one
and got thumped in the primary.
But also, if we're supposed to be here being, thinking about this election and talking about what we know, we tell you what we know. You don't have to
believe it. Well, it's a call-in, and I think you just don't help
the objectivity
of the situation by going over and over. I'm happy that I made my point.
And we're happy, too. Thank you very much,
Cynthia.
Okay, we're out of time. Thanks to everyone who called in. I'd also like to thank the wonderful Blair Horner for joining us today. Support for the Vox Pop comes from the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974. PreserveNYS.org. 10,000 villages in Stuyvesant Plaza, Albany, featuring fairly traded home decor and gifts handcrafted by artisans around the world. 10,000villages.com for additional store locations. Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, featuring a variety of mums, shrubs, and trees for fall planting and bulbs for spring, open Monday through Saturday, 8 to 5, and Sundays, 9 to 4, a gardener's destination, storiesnursery.com, Dr. Joseph Cohen, optometrist, eye examinations, and classic eyewear in historic Uptown Kingston, most insurance accepted, optomic diversity in the Hudson Valley, CohenOptometry.com. Thanks for joining us on the Vox Pop, everybody. Remember, the conversation continues online at WAMC.org/VoxPop. Our engineer has been the incomparable Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by the equally incomparable Bruce Herbach. Our producer's Jessica Blaustein Marshall. She's terrific also. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.